Excellencies, honorable ministers of the Central American countries here present today, I feel ashamed that I am not speaking in your language. But you please excuse me. Excellencies, ambassadors, my esteemed colleagues, Graziano da Silva and Ethereum Cousin, distinguished participants, ladies and gentlemen. In these times of turmoil, with conflicts, political upheaval, and mass migration making headlines every day, the less dramatic disasters are quietly playing out around the world, threatening lives and livelihoods with far less fanfare. Drought is one such disaster. It is affecting nations around the world, from Thailand to India to Ethiopia, and it is threatening the nutrition and health of millions of children, women, and men. Yet the current drought cycle has failed to capture the global attention it deserves. And this is particularly true for Central America's dry corridor, which has experienced the worst drought in 30 years. Last year, no less than 60% of the cereal harvest was lost in El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua as a result of El Niño. In some places, the losses ran as high as 80%. Thousands of cattle have died. Today, more than 3.5 million people need food assistance, and many small family farmers have lost their livelihoods. The purpose of our meeting here today is to throw more light on the impact of drought on the dry corridor and to devise actions that result in lasting resilience for the people who live there. Of course, at times of crisis like this, emergency relief must be a priority for the international community. But at IFAD and their own-based agencies, we are also aware that building resilience is a matter of life or death for many of the 3 billion people who live in the rural areas of developing countries. What is resilience? For us, simply stated, it is the ability to bounce back from shocks, from crisis, and this could include flood or droughts, from conflicts, job losses, as well as breakdown of local institutions. In this era of climate change, the shocks that poor rural people face are multiplying. In the Central American dry corridor, droughts and intense rainfall cycles have intensified, particularly during the El Niño and El Niña cycles, making it more difficult for them to escape poverty and hunger. When disaster strikes, farmers in developed countries, advanced economies, can cope because they have an asset base, they have insurance, they have access to financial services, and they have safety nets, social safety nets. But as we know, smallholder and family farmers in the developing countries in South Asia, Latin America, and Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, do not have these safeguards. And as a result, even when times are good, it is simply too risky even to invest much more on their farms or try to plant a new seed, for example, a new variety, or diversify into livestock or new crops. When disaster strikes, these farmers are forced to take drastic action, remove their children from school, sell their assets, abandon their farms, and then sometimes migrate to cities. On a personal level, it is a tragedy when farmers are forced to abandon the land they have farmed for generations. But on a national level, it can compound disaster by leading to greater food insecurity and malnutrition. Come to think about it, Small family farms are responsible for up to 80% of food production in developing countries. Ironically, you are all familiar with this, they're the ones who go hungry. Over 70% of the world's hungriest people live in developing countries, and they depend on smallholder agriculture, broadly defined, for their livelihoods. We know here in Rome, the RUBAs, that investing in resilience of the small family farmers is investing in resilience of our food systems, the resilience of communities, and the strength of nations. And that is why at IFAD we work to improve the ability of poor rural people to manage a growing set of risks in a rapidly changing world. Climate change has been part of our strategy since 2010. Our programs and projects support climate-sensitive action. And in 2012, we started to implement the adaptation to smallholder agriculture, ASAP. This is an innovative financing mechanism that channels climate finance directly to smallholder farmers. Today, this program is worth $366 million, coupled with funds from JEF, another $217 million. It's quite a robust program. And we have seen time and time again in the 98 countries where we work that with the right investments, small family farms can achieve remarkable results, even in the most marginal and ecologically fragile areas of the world, even during periods of climate change. I could give you a few examples. In Guatemala, in El Salvador, we were working with farmers to improve soil and water conservation or helping women grow vegetables around the world. Today, IFAD has 11 ongoing projects in Central America with a total investment of $367 million. There are several of these examples. In Nicaragua, an ASAP-supported program is helping smallholder farmers cope with higher temperatures and changing rainfall patterns. Now, these few examples of the work that we do, funding across the corridor, SECO, areas of El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua, are indicative of our engagement in the region. Global environmental problems, such as the impact of climate change, do not respect borders. We have dedicated close to $600 million to climate risk management. But addressing this reality requires global action in support of small family farmers the world over so that they can be resilient in the face of climate change. A world without small farmers would be a world with hunger. A world with less biodiversity. A world without rural communities that develop around small farms. We cannot have vibrant, sustainable cities unless we have economically viable rural areas. I hope that in our discussions today, apart from making declarations, we'll take concrete action to face the problem. Thank you.
Excellencies, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, my colleagues, much has been said already. And I'm afraid that my colleagues have demonstrated what happens when the Rome-based agencies do work closely together, that we agree on what is required, on what is necessary to move us forward to support the people of the Dry Corridor. Excellencies, 2 months ago, I visited El Salvador and Guatemala. I spoke with families, farmers, community leaders, government leaders who told me firsthand about the personal impact of the longest drought that any of them had ever witnessed in their lifetimes. We talked about the devastating effects that the 4 years of drought wrought not only on their farms and plots, but increasingly on their abilities to nourish their families and hold on to their livelihoods. They told me about how their wells had dried up and how many, and in some cases, any opportunities for work had dried up. The ambassador from Guatemala and I rode on a helicopter across the entire countryside, and we saw the difference between large irrigated plots of land that were green and thriving and long, long stretches of brown land where there was no irrigation, where those farmers who we were going to visit lived. When we sat down our helicopters, it was in one of those brown patches. And those that we met with as we walked through their community spoke about their plans to overcome today's challenges, because none of them were defeated. There was an expectation of a better tomorrow. They saw our helicopter landing as a possibility for change. And they weren't asking for handouts. Nobody was looking for the representatives from the government or from WFP to bring them food. They were proud to show me the project that, with support from FAO on the technical side and investments from WFP, that they were bringing in irrigation to their community for the first time. It wasn't high-tech irrigation. It was pipes and that we were running from a hill where water had been conserved. But for the first time, they were going to grow gardens. Gardens that would give them food for their children to eat and also surpluses to sell. They were excited about the possibility that the rain not coming would not change their ability to feed their children. In fact, that they were no longer going to need to measure what was possible by what Mother Nature gave to them. Ladies and gentlemen, although the impact of climate change in Central America doesn't often make global headlines, as my colleagues have said, the impacts on the poorest and most marginalized people are often as severe. And we've heard from both the Director General and the President about the numbers of people who have been affected, about the challenges that this first drought, then El Nino, wrought on these communities. But what we need to remember is that while El Nino is a regular weather pattern that comes every 3 to 5 years, that as Mary Robinson, who has been recently named as the new UN envoy for El Nino, said to me just 2 days ago, what we need to remember is that because of climate change, the waters are warmer. And what the science is beginning to show and demonstrate is that these warmer waters, when affected by regular weather patterns of El Nino and La Nina, create even greater impact, greater droughts, longer periods of time. And La Nina, we follow on by flooding. We know what is going to happen for poor and marginalized communities living in fragile and degraded landscapes, relying on small farms and their own labor. what is happening, what those weather patterns, what that science is creating in their lives is more desperation. In the recent household food security assessments undertaken by WFP and FAO, together with government counterparts and other partners, demonstrate the likelihood that for those people that we visited, it will only get worse. And you heard Kanayo note for you, the president note for you, the challenges of negative coping strategies and the kind of activities that people take in situations because of the challenges that this drought creates. And you also heard the solutions. It's building resilience. It's creating programs that will ensure that people have the ability to maintain their livelihoods. We can get ahead of these cycles. We can work together in all of the programs that have been described by my colleagues to support the communities and the governments, because this is a time when it is not about the agencies leading. We can bring the programs and ideas, but it is the governments that must lead. And what we provide as the Rome-based agency is that support to mitigate and manage the unprecedented yet predictable and predicted risk through the types of comprehensive, coordinated, and collective actions that will support the resilience building, that will change the lives. We must implement adaptation measures that will turn that brown land green, that will ensure our ability to manage the risk, to modify the productive schemes, but we must perform this work collectively. We must plan collectively, resource collectively, and implement the programs collectively. To support the strategies, which must include, as I noted, irrigation, but the other tools that were identified by my colleagues, because we must have an integral management an integrated management of the risk, because integrated risk management investment is the only way to deliver the outcomes that will change the lives of the individuals we serve. But we also must recognize it's not going to happen in one season, because as any farmer or community leader will herself tell you, resilience cannot be achieved in 3, 6, or 12-month cycles. The kinds of activities and actions and approaches agreed by the Rome-based agencies and the member states and every RBA stakeholder are outlined in the conceptual framework for strengthening food security and nutrition. And as we begin our dialogue today, listening to the representatives from capitals, the ministers who have come because they are leading on this work, we will be reminded of the importance, again, of putting people, communities, and governments in the driving seat, as well as the importance of not just programs. We must scale up to support larger sections of populations if we expect to make a difference across the entire dry corridor. DG Graziano said it, every drought need not become a crisis. Nor should we as WFP or any of the other agencies, including FAO and EFAD, continue to save the same lives every year. But that means undertaking, widely undertaking more tangible solutions and achieving durable, sustainable success. I've seen for myself, as I said in the beginning, the difference simple changes can make, but they require financial investment. At the risk of repeating myself, I will say that it requires investment, not just of the Rome-based agencies as we stand here today, committed to working together with you, not just of the individuals from the government who are leading, who are here, and you will hear from them later today, but also from the communities themselves, the people we serve, and the private sector. We will need, and it's unfortunate that we don't have more private sector representation in this room today, because we will need the private sector as part of investing in and increasing opportunities for the smallholder farmers who are living in the dry corridor. It is when we are all working together, ladies and gentlemen, supporting sustainable, durable, collective outcomes that we will make the change. And I don't, none of us fool ourselves. This is no easy task, particularly when there's so many crises around the world. It is easy for the world to say, there's no need to prioritize the dry corridor. But we must bring the attention that is necessary to the solutions that are possible to change the outcomes for those who will never sit in rooms like these but are depending upon us as their voice, as their leaders, to get this right. Because now is the time. The global community embraced Agenda 2030 and a life of peace and prosperity for all, and a commitment to achieving and working to ensure that we address the challenges of the furthest behind first. You don't get much further behind than a mother living in the dry corridor without irrigation in Central America. So this is who we are talking about. These are the faces that the world committed to putting first. It is our opportunity to say to the world that the plans are here, the commitments from the governments are here, the commitments from the people are here. We can achieve zero hunger. We can make the change that will ensure peace and prosperity for all. And I am proud, along with my colleagues at the Rome-based agency, to be your partner in making what seems impossible a reality. And that is every mother, every father in the dry corridor, when the rains don't come, having the ability to feed their own children. Thank you.